It is Locked On Jazz for the 31st of March. The Vegas proposal, the offseason, and a surprising answer from Andy Larson to how is Donovan better. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. We move into our 10th year, because we're in our 10th year, of doing this daily podcast. Thank you so very much. I kind of feel like I blew yesterday's show. It happens. Maybe it was really truthful. I thought yesterday was probably a day to celebrate our togetherness over the last 9 years, and I probably didn't do that quite as well with everything that was going on, so my bad. But really, really awesome. Thank you. I hope you got a chance to hear Chad Ford. He and Mark Stein were just fabulous. So make sure you go grab that podcast and listen to it. Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. And feel free to download it, subscribe, follow it on Spotify, subscribe on iTunes, and fire through with that. So I thought there's a bunch of interesting things going on. The Vegas proposal is being floated out there. If you haven't heard it, the idea is that the way the NBA is going to get back to work is that everyone is going to go to Vegas. They're going to find some big resort hotel, put everybody in it, and then play games at a gym in Vegas. Probably they did the G League showcase in Las Vegas. There's a few reasons why, frankly, this makes a lot of sense. There's also a few reasons why they did it at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center in 2019. And had all 28 teams there. So there's some reasons why this could work. And there's some aspects to, you could actually then play almost a mini tournament out of it. So let's walk through some of the factors. And I'm not on the inside on this at all, but this is some of the factors that are driving these conversations. One, the chances of us playing games in front of fans anytime before probably next season seems to be really low, right? Like, just, you know, if you just kind of logically deduce, it seems unlikely that we're getting into a big arena with people. I suspect the first league that does that is either the NFL or Major League Baseball at some point. But for the NBA and the NHL, I think that feels to me as though it's unlikely. I don't know that. That's the vibe. Like, you kind of follow social distancing. I mean, it does feel as though even when they raise us out of shelter in place, that we're still going to have social distancing, and social distancing in an NBA arena is virtually impossible. So therefore, that would be my first guess. So the minute you're not playing in front of fans, well, now you no longer really need to play in home arenas. And if your first priority is keeping everyone healthy and trying not to get, it seems unlikely you want to have everybody jumping on airplanes and everybody interacting in 30 different hotels. So you, if the first thing is it's unlikely to have fans, and the second thing is it's traveling and staying in, you know, a bunch of seven different hotels for a period of time, and opening up exposure to more and more contacts seems unlikely, then this idea that you're going to suddenly put 30 NBA teams in Vegas, play at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center, begins to make a little bit of sense. I don't know how many courts they have there and all the details. I'll talk to some people who were at the G League Showcase this year, but they did this at the G League Showcase. They had a 28-team tournament, and they bracketed it out and did it and had it there and televised it. The other thing that would get interesting about that is you could really start to limit the people that are there. So in other words, it looks to me as though they had two courts and they just ran games all day long. They started it at 3 o'clock Eastern and then had a 3:30 game and a 5:30 game and a 6:30 game and an 8 o'clock game and a 9 game and a 10:30. And then they flipped it the next day. And so they're, you know, depending what time they start, they were able to get about seven games in a day. Well, the NBA does that. They're probably on their way, and they start a little earlier, and they get 9 games in, and suddenly you're getting it awfully close to getting your games. You need to, every NBA team needs to get 70 games in, or else the regional sports network, the teams owe the regional sports networks money. So 70 is the magic number. We're going to surpass 70. We're going to play 71 or 72 games, like, just because of that driving for. I mean, these things can all change, right? But like, if you start to work these things together, there's certain kind of benchmarks you can watch. So, you know, regular season, we probably need to get 70, 72 games in, somewhere in that range. And there's teams that played 67, so everybody plays at least five, some play seven, and you get everybody over 70 and you're good there. Then we got the health issues we just talked about, and then you have the game Mandalay Bay. And then from a broadcast standpoint, you can actually probably just put two TV crews there and have the games being sent out to the regional sports networks, and you've just eliminated a lot of contacts that are in the arena at that time. So things just, you know, it just, you're able to kind of narrow it down. And those G League showcase games, I don't think had fans. That if you look at some of the pictures online, they just had a big, huge curtain on one side, and they had it set up for broadcast, and then they had scouts on the other side. So you suddenly are able, you know, this is how this thing kind of becomes together. And they had two courts. And so you have two national TV crews that are sending the game out to the various regional sports group, and some of them are national broadcasts, and some of them aren't. And that's, and you move from there. Now, this is the mechanism by which the league gets back and we finish this season. It doesn't seem to have much of any other idea. Here's what gets funky about it. And this is whether the players' union gets comfortable with this. There's always a fine line in how our players are treated. In one sense, you know, as humans, and in other sense, as assets. And that fine line, I always feel like, you know, you kind of move in between that, and you got to be really careful of that. And that's why they have a players union, is so that it never gets to the point where they're just completely treated as though they're assets. This one gets close to me, and it depends on how you're able to do it. Are you telling the players they can't have family? Are you telling the players they have to be self-quarantined? Are you telling the players they can't go out for dinner because maybe they, you know, how are you, those little inner workings on this are whether it's going to work or not. Because that's the fine line here you got to dance. So if you're saying to someone like, and obviously LeBron and Chris Paul and are the guys that matter, but you know, I don't know the date, but let's make up a date. Let's take, you know, June 15th. I'm totally making that up. So you say to the players, we're going to open, and maybe you can do training camp at your own facility. And so June 15th, we're going to get back to training camp, and July 1, you're now in Vegas at Mandalay Bay, and from July 1 to July 15, we're finishing out the regular season, and now from July 15 to September 15, we're playing the playoffs. So you are now going to ask an NBA player, and you know, you can say they're paid plenty, fine, but they also have to agree to this, that you can have your opinion on whether they should or not. You're now going to ask an NBA player to spend 75 days maybe in a self-quarantine without in Vegas, at least the teams that are in the finals. They might not go for that. They might not deem that as okay. And that'll be what's interesting to watch. There's going to be an entire negotiation that takes place here on how you get this done. But the script is beginning to be leaked out there and murmured and talked about as what the possibility is on how we are going to play again one day. Or how we're going to get to watch, really. They're going to play, we're going to watch, and we're going to be entertained again. That's the script. And I can't, at this moment, and obviously it's fluid, at sitting here on March 31st, I have a hard time seeing another vision taking place other than this. And then the question's going to be, under how strict of a restriction are the players under, and then are they willing to do it? And that's going to be the question. All right. We'll talk about the offseason. We've got plenty of time to talk about. There was just a lot of offseason talk that's interesting. Impacts Jordan Clarkson, impacts probably Emmanuel Mudiay. So interesting stuff. We'll do that tomorrow. Andy Larson rejoins me as we continue Here, Murdoch Hyundai continues with the Murdoch Sure program plus Hyundai Assurance for you right now, and it's pretty fabulous what they're doing. So Hyundai Assurance is taking it to the next level. Hyundai Assurance is giving is paying six payments for you if you lose your job. Six. It's pretty incredible. There's no question there are times you may decide right now is just the right time to buy a car, or you actually need to do it right now. And then you have the Murdoch Sure program that goes with it to help you out. So what are all the things that Murdoch's doing? 0% on all models. No payments for 90 days. You can shop the entire process online so you can avoid a contact. The one individual will bring a car out to you. You can do your test, buy the whole car test drive pending. And then Hyundai will pay up to six payments for you if you lose your job with Hyundai Assurance. It's pretty incredible. And then, frankly, the important one in here is how great the Hyundais are. I'm driving the Palisade right now. Wow. That is just a great, great car. Good sized. It's got the third row seats. Got every bell, every whistle. Super price. We own the Santa Fe. That's what our son drives most of the time. It's been terrific. The little Kona, zippy, fun, awesome. Fun to have with all the safety features as well. Just an incredible lineup of cars for Hyundai. You get so much for the dollar. And then the Murdoch Sure, 0% on all models, no payments for 90 days. And if you lose your job, Hyundai will pay six payments. Again, no different than ever before. Obviously, you're doing a lot of it online, but if you would like me to, I can set you up so you have a communication with someone at Murdoch and make you feel better about your experience. That is at Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. Feel free to email me at dlock09@gmail.com if you would like to make sure that you're set up and have a VIP experience. Food delivery right now, Postmates has great deals for you going on. Postmates is doing some fabulous things. So let's get into what Postmates has for you right now. Postmates, which is if you haven't done the Postmates before, it's a pretty cool deal, from an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beer to a dinner for the family to burgers and sushi, whatever it might be. No more trips to the store, no more late-night food runs. Postmates is here for you. Download the Postmates app on iOS or on Android. Find your favorites and get anything you want. It's a great way to help the local companies. Their money is coming through Postmates, and you don't have to leave the house. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 off free delivery credit for the first 7 days. So start your free deliveries, download the app, and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. And Postmates, again, great way to help the local companies that are trying to keep things going. It's Postmates.com or Postmates, and the promo code is LOCKEDONNBA. Day two with Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune Jazz beat writer, now doing data analysis of the COVID-19 and all that is taking place there. How are you filling your days, by the way? You like to work like I do. I'm finding this to be not the easiest time for those of us that like to be overly productive. How are you finding yours? How are you doing?
Honestly, since I got the assignment that once I knew that I was asked to move from basketball to coronavirus stuff, I felt a lot better about it. I think for about a week there, maybe a week and a half, I was really bored, I'll be honest. I think part of it was the early days of the quarantine. We flew home from Oklahoma City, and for the first couple of days, it felt like, okay, we are the only ones in quarantine, right? And so it kind of felt maybe like your friends and family and whatever else were having fun without you. And I was just stuck at home. But then I think since we were like, okay, this is a big deal, and everyone is now kind of staying at home or has been directed to stay at home. And now that I have this task to really kind of bring analysis to the Salt Lake Tribune's coverage, now I can really kind of dig into the numbers. I've got this purpose more or less, and can really kind of have fun with the data and coming up with new and different things I want to write stories about that'll come out over the next couple of weeks.
What did you decide? So Angela Dunn met with us and basically said, if you hadn't had 10 or 15 minutes of direct contact inside 6 feet with somebody who was infected, that you probably needed to be aware but not in quarantine, which was an interesting one for those of us that were on the plane and we don't share the same bus. So it actually got interesting from a media. Almost none of us that are in the Jazz media felt as though we had been inside that realm, and turns out none of us had. What did you determine? I know Tony decided that he was going to go full quarantine. What did you decide?
Yeah, I went full quarantine. I mean, look, I just think that, like, if it was close, I wasn't going to risk it. And it's just like, all right, so, you know, Rudy touched my microphone, low risk. That's a low risk thing, but still, you know, I think there's the, you know, we talked to Donovan for about 5 minutes and yeah, from a distance of 6 feet. But then I also, you know, talked to him in the hallway after this happened. And, you know, and obviously I talked to Rudy in the games before. So it's like, you know, it adds up to probably, yeah, 15 to 20 minutes of interaction between the two of them. For, you know, it's just like you kind of do the math and you try to figure it out. And it's just like, listen, I'm not going to put my loved ones and friends and family members at risk, even if, you know, it's not a huge transmission risk. I'd much, much, much rather be safe than sorry on this kind of thing.
Yeah, we did it badly. I mean, we did a little bit of both. We, you know, I stayed 6 feet away from everyone and slept in a separate room and all that. And then at the same time, when suddenly like life needs happened, I actually drove someone somewhere, which was like, okay, what are we doing? Like, but like, yeah. it was kind of, I just found it was like a really hard adjustment to try to figure out how to live this life. Now it's, you know, now it's actually like, it is what it is. And we're getting kind of used to it, right? We're stuck in Summit County and I think everybody else will probably be soon. And we're in shelter in place. And you just try to, you know, I tweeted this the other day. My daughter said to my son, do you want to play ping pong? He's like, no. And she's like, why not? He's like, we've played 11 games to 21. And you would appreciate this. His like reaction was, that's like 360 points. I like left that out of the tweet, but that was like his math. Like he's a math kid. Like his brain was like, we've played like 360 points. Like, you know, it was pretty funny. Like, so I do think that everyone's just kind of trying to figure out a little bit.
See, but I'm with your daughter here on this one, where 11 games wouldn't have been enough for me. Like I'm one of those people that would have wanted to keep going until this, you know, the match score was like 34 to 15 or something, you know, just like some ridiculous number of games.
Well, but, maybe they should just play ping pong to 500 instead.
Yeah. You know, just why not? You've got the time
you've
in the world.
Time, right.
I was thinking too, like you mentioned how, you know, we're kind of like the weird half measures that we take. And I was thinking just like on that Wednesday when I came and kind of talked to you guys at the shoot around, and was asked to move away from anyone who was on the team plane. It was such an interesting moment because, you know, I had hung out with media members the night before in Oklahoma City. So it's just one of those things that was a clear, I guess, example right away where it was like, okay, these half measures don't make any sense. And at some point, but I didn't think it would happen this quickly, but at some point we can't play games with 20,000 people in arenas in this way.
Right. Well, I mean, then on the other level, like also our ignorance, like people have asked me, and you actually were the one, you came by my broadcast site and said, this is scary. I actually wasn't there. Like, I think maybe ignorance or survival. I mean, I will admit, like, I had a moment where I kind of broke up a little bit as I had to call my wife and say, like, hey, this is what's going on. And then as I've joked on the air about it, like, I also realized that if I, like, my wife would have just been like, dude, buck up. Like, you know, and, you know, there was a little concern. We only just, you know, parenting wise, my son was home alone. And I didn't think I was coming home for 14 days and my wife wasn't coming home for 5. Like the plan was for me to arrive home that night, right? Like he was supposed to be home until I got home. He's 17. He's probably fine. But it was still, you know, all of a sudden it was this concept that, oh, he might actually be really home by himself for a long time. But anyway, it's interesting to me just on the whole, even I, like we all gave everyone rides home from the airport.
Right.
Like, what were we doing? Right. Like if we were all going into quarantine, why were we giving each other rides home in the air? Like it was like, I mean, I guess we all had to get home, but it was like just still a ridiculous concept of like, we didn't know. Right. Like you just didn't know at that point in time as this was all going on, what we were really embarking on. And I think the other one that's clear on this is that our doctors are doing the best they can and are experts, but I'm not sure they entirely know, right? There's a lack of data and there's it's new, so there's not an actual protocol here yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's fascinating about this is that we did not know this thing existed anywhere in the world 3 months ago. 3 months is not a long time to do any sort of actual scientific research on, anything that's happening, especially something that you can't see or detect. It's that we know as much about the coronavirus and is honestly pretty impressive. And I think it's the task of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of scientists who have dedicated now every single bit of their time to make this happen. But truth is, like, for the best scientific data, you want more than just 2 months of knowing about a thing, even in the best of circumstances, let alone given that, like, China's numbers maybe aren't wholly reliable, and there's all sorts of reasons why you can't go to a place and find out what's going to be happening, because scientists don't want to travel and spread the infection themselves, and doctors get this as well. Anyway, it's crazy. I'm actually impressed kind of on both sides, how much we do know, and then there are still things that we just have no idea of right now.
More with Andy Larson coming. A reminder for you, Homie is still out there, still doing all the essential business that they need to do to help you out. Homie, actually right now is a great time. I think I told the story yesterday that, we have a friend who, they're moving. Like they didn't have a chance to dictate when they do things. That's the reality of the real estate world. Well, right now would be a great time to save every single cent you can. And that's what Homie has done for so many people as they revolutionized the real estate world so far. It's been kind of fun to watch these guys build this thing up. And now they've over $50 million in savings from commissions. They've done over $1 billion of real estate transactions since 2019, just changing the world. These are these great Utah companies. BYU professors did a study. Homie is selling homes for more money and 8 days faster over the past 3 years. But here's the thing. Homie is saving sellers $10,000 on average. And obviously right now, you want to save everything you can. Homie will refund you up to $5,000 so you can buy with more money for your home. And then there's a set price also when you sell your house. So it's really a great system for you. Text LOCK to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. An experienced local Homie agent will help you every step of the way. Right now might be the time to get the background information as well. You can do that as well by texting LOCK to 88588. Let's go back to basketball. How much better is Donovan Mitchell in year three than what we've seen in year one and two?
This might be a controversial take. I don't think he's that much better. First of all, I think you look at the stat line. It's like, all right, it's 24.2 points a game versus 23.8. I'm not trying to be a points per game guy here, but he is shooting the ball 2% better. The assists are exactly the same. The steals went down. The turnovers went down a tenth of a point. The fouls went down 0.3 points. But, I think we're really talking about basically improvement around the margins. I think it's actually interesting. The improvements he did make did not come in the areas that I expected them to. I expected him basically to get to the free throw line more. He got to the free throw line less. I expected him to maybe become a more intelligent or more frequent passer. And indeed, he's probably passed less. But what he did do was just become a better shooter, quite frankly, a better guy at the knockdown mid-range shot. And, went from shooting 40% from 16 feet to the three-point line last year to 47% this year. And honestly, that's kind of the biggest change in his numbers, along with that floater range 3 to 10 feet. He also started to figure out as well. But like in terms of the shot selection, I think it probably got worse. I don't think that, the kind of secondary skills have rounded out. He might be a little bit better defender, but I don't know that we saw that consistently. And so I have to kind of say that, he's probably 5 to 10% better, but maybe not the leap that people really hoped for going into his third season.
I still think there's an element of trying to figure out what he does best. I think he's a bona fide scorer, but I even go back to his draft workout. Like, this guy could really shoot it, like really, really shoot it. And if you go back to, I'll actually run it right now. So we go back to January 1st. So that's about the last 30 games of the season. And we play with this, and you take the guys who've taken the most, you know, at least, let's say they've taken at least 100 catch and shoot threes in that time period. Fair sample size for us.
Sure.
Look out, Andy Larson and David Locke are like now grabbing, like running numbers as the it's really brilliant podcasting. Hey, and you look at, you know, who the best shooters are in that realm. Like, he's in that group. Like, and then you get into, like, you know, open threes, and he gets into that group. And so it gets interesting to me of, like, I do, you know, he's a bona fide pull up guy. He can get to, he doesn't get to the basket quite as much as he once did, but you know what? This guy is like, and he, since February 1st, which is last, he shot 53% on catch and shoot threes, the best in the NBA for the last 16 games, you know, and you take it to January 1st, it's not quite as dominant, but he's in that grouping. Like, the number one guy since January 1st is generally the number one guy in the league, Buddy Hield. And then he's in about the top 15 or top 20. I can't get it to pull up exactly right now, but I know I had in my notes that he was number one in the league since February 1st on catch and shoot threes. Like, that's incredible. And I wonder if there's a little bit more of a Klay Thompson to his game, right? Like, let's run him off some pins downs and get him set up for threes and do some different things with him than just have him play the high pick and roll off the bounce. I mean, this guy's catch and shoot game is elite.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, for the season, he's 43.7% catch and shoot, but pull-ups, he's only 31.6%, and he's taking four of those a game and only 2.5 catch and shoots per game. So, to me, again, that's it's a shot selection thing of, like, okay, we clearly can make the mid-range pull-up at a high level, and I think it's probably a good shot for him to have in his arsenal. I don't think he has the pull-up three. And I think, you know, some of those situations are difficult, right? They're end-of-shot clock things where, you know, hey, and maybe 31% from three is just as good as 45% from two, you know? So you're fine with him taking the shot, the pull-up shot, regardless of whether it comes, if it's in the last 5 seconds of the shot clock. But agreed, like, I think having him run off some pin downs and just do some catch and shoot stuff would be really effective. It's just, and I think that's where we kind of go back to Mike Conley a little bit, is maybe you have the ball in his hands, or maybe you have the ball in Joe Ingles' hands and have him set up Donovan, because I don't know that Donovan's a terrific decision maker right now necessarily with the ball in his hands.
You know, you look at his catch and shoot numbers, he's, and we'll take it back to the last about 25 games because it's a better sample size. He's taken 72. So he's taking, to your point, he's taking about three a game. The guys that are the best, and the guys, you know, who really do it, Duncan Robinson, Davis Bertans, Robert Covington, Terrence Ross, Danilo Gallinari, Kevin Huerter, these guys, you know, really take, they're taking five a game. You've got to get Donovan somehow to 5 and 6 catch and shoot threes a game.
I completely agree, and I think that's where, you know, you look at who you're playing him with, in order to try to help that. You know, I think obviously he's spending most of his time playing alongside one of Mike Conley or Joe Ingles, and I think those guys have different strengths as passers. You know, Joe Ingles isn't actually very good at passing to the weak side corner. He's much more comfortable passing to the role man. He can pass to the weak side corner, but it's not something it's his preference to do. And, you know, honestly, Mike Conley is still trying to figure out some of that, that chemistry as well. So yeah, in terms of trying to figure out how you best utilize this clearly, like, very useful player, those are the kind of things you figure out in year 2, 3, and 4, right? Is, okay, you have this really kind of incredible level of talent, but how do you get it so that it's not just Donovan kind of doing Donovan things and kind of allowed to do whatever he wants, but it's how do you channel it in the most effective way so that, you know, you have the best team on the floor possible, especially next to a lot of other talented guys.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, Quinn's pushed Boyan into a whole aspect of his game that, you know, he's really was kind of a natural catch and shoot guy. and then a transition player, and he's made him play with the ball in his hands. It's led to some turnovers, but he's pushed him kind of beyond his game to do things he's never done. It's almost like you have to do the same thing with Donovan, but almost backing his game up into what's a less... I think it would be a hard thing to talk Donovan in. Like, I'm taking you off the ball and I'm going to play you a little bit like a Klay Thompson, or the way we play a Boyan, or the play we play a Kyle Korver. Like, I think that might be a hard one to try to talk Donovan into a little bit.
Agreed. And honestly, I don't know that it may not be the best long-term move, right? Like, the best long-term move might be, hey, you know, maybe Donovan's not very good at this right now, but if he can figure it out and become and have, like, basically what you'd want is either Derrick Rose levels of getting to the rim and finishing, or kind of Dwayne Wade's sensibility in terms of how he's able to be crafty and finish and honestly go to the free throw line five times more than he currently does. You know, I think that if he can learn that, that's peak Donovan, right? Like, that makes you the best chance to win a title, is if Donovan is a top 10 player. And maybe if you take the ball out of his hands, he loses those developmental chances to become that.
He's Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune. He's done a great job all season long with the Jazz, now covering COVID-19. Again, if you can support the Salt Lake Tribune, it's worthwhile. They're very, very important to us right now, so please do so. Tuesday edition, Locked on NBA, still coming out for you all the time here. If you're an NFL draft fan, Locked on NFL Draft's one of the most highly rated shows out there, preparing you for the big NFL draft as the NFL continues along. Remember, we also are going back through all the fun times around the network of kind of, so we're here for you. We're giving you that. But right now, if you're an NFL draft fan, why don't you tell your smart device to play podcast Locked on NFL Draft.